You're listening to TGSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
Today on Wings, Village Goddesses of India.
The divine in India is perceived as the ultimate truth. It is idolized in different forms, such as male and female, and also as semi-human, like that of Ganesha, the elephant god. But each one is treated as an individual power, and people all over the country pray to the divine power of their choice. Against this background, this radio program is about our goddesses and how extremely popular they are in the Hindu mind.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Hello, I'm Indu Ramesh from Bangalore, India. Today we are talking about goddesses in Hinduism. I have three friends with me, Vatsala Iyengar, broadcaster, translator, and writer. She has four books to her credit about legends, jewels, and sacred objects used in temples. I guess she is just the right person for this show. I also have Gayatri Balu, an attorney who has specialized in corporate law, keenly interested in theater, as well as both classical and folk music. And Aparna Devagiri, a human resources specialist with a multinational company, again deep into classical music and Hindu philosophy. Before we start the program, let me give you a brief introduction about Hindu deities. In India, goddesses are not ordinary women. Hundreds of them are worshipped in the country. Their images are extremely beautiful. 40 different types of diamond, ruby, emerald, and gold jewels, like the crown, the head jewels, dangling earrings, nose rings, bangles, wristlets, finger rings, waist belt, toe rings, and many more adorn them, making them shine very brightly. They are also dressed in dazzling silks and decorated with strings of flowers. Huge temples are built in their names all over India, and devotees visit these temples in large numbers almost every day to seek the grace of the goddess.
Mugi ge natu chanda, joktiya jadi chanda, kollana gulidali chanda, hennina maimyaga, naga yurige chanda, taiya jadi chanda, taiya jadi chanda.
Her nose ring is enchanting. Her long tresses, her symbol of marriage, her armlet adorning the body of a woman are beauteous. The mother's tresses are beauteous.
At the same time, these goddesses are very powerful. They ride a tiger or a lion and kill demons and devils fighting all alone. There are so many legends and tales about their independence and dominance over the male. What do you say, Gayatri?
In India, we have a goddess for agriculture, a goddess for epidemic diseases, a goddess for wealth, a goddess for protection of the city, a goddess for knowledge, and even a mighty goddess to kill evil forces. The list of her powers and her various forms is endless. Vatsala has done a lot of research on this topic. Let's hear what she has got to say.
You are right. Perhaps only in India do we come across such a female-oriented worship system.
What is the reason for the popularity of the goddesses in our male-dominated society?
To answer your question, we have to go back to the very beginning of Indian civilization. As you know, India is basically an agricultural country with over 70% of its population in rural areas. So, naturally, people gave great importance to fertility of the soil and strong sons to cultivate the land.
ಏಳು ತಲೆದ್ದು ಎದ್ದು ಯಾರ್ಯಾರ ನೆನೆಯಲಿ ಎಳ್ಳು ಜೀರಿಗೆ ಬೆಳೆಯೋಳ ಎಳ್ಳು ಜೀರಿಗೆ ಬೆಳೆಯೋಳ ಭೂತಾಯ ಎದ್ದೊಂದು ಗಳಿಗೆ ನೆನೆದ್ಯಾವು ಎದ್ದೊಂದು ಗಳಿಗೆ ನೆನೆದ್ಯಾವು
ಅಟ್ ದ ಬ್ರೇಕ್ ಆಫ್ ಡಾನ್ ದ ಸನ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ಸಾಯಿಲ್ ಪ್ರೇಸ್ ಟು ದ ಆಲ್ ಇಂಪಾರ್ಟೆಂಟ್ ಮದರ್ ಅರ್ತ್ who fills his field with the aroma of spices. Is there a better way to start his day? In the second stanza, this cultivator makes a votive offering to his family deity to help him grow maize.
Mooda muttaya muttaya noda badatana moodlalli ragi meleyudda ಮೂಡ್ಲಲ್ಲಿ ರಾಗಿ ಮೆಳೆಯುತ್ತ ಬೆಳೆದರೆ ಮಾಡುವೆ ನಿನಗೆ ಹರಿಸೇವೆ ಮಾಡುವೆ ನಿನಗೆ ಹರಿಸೇವೆ ಮಾಡುವೆ ನಿನಗೆ ಹರಿಸೇವೆ
ಟು ಪ್ರೇ ಫಾರ್ ದೀಸ್ ಬ್ಲೆಸ್ಸಿಂಗ್ಸ್ ವಿಲೇಜ್ ಗಾಡಸಸ್ ವರ್ ಕ್ರಿಯೇಟೆಡ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ವರ್ ವರ್ಶಿಪ್ಡ್ ಆಸ್ ಮದರ್ ಗಾಡಸ್ ಅಂಡರ್ ದ ಕಾಮನ್ ನೇಮ್ ಆಫ್ ದೇವಿ ಮಾತಾ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಅಮ್ಮ The name of the village was also associated with the goddess to establish her power over the area. In fact, even Mumbai got its name because of Mumba Devi, its guardian goddess, and likewise Kolkata from Kali. Let me tell you about an interesting episode. In South India, in the state of Karnataka, by the beginning of the Christian era, food gatherers would place a few neem leaves in their basket with the belief that this would ensure a good collection of food. Neem, as you know, is antibacterial, antifungus vegetation. In a tropical country like India, neem leaves are considered to be helpful in curing diseases like pox, plague, etc., and it is believed that health-granting goddesses can ward off such epidemic diseases. Thus, there are goddesses who carry the name of Plague Amma, Pox Amma, etc. There is even an AIDS Amma for curing this disease. Such is the belief people have in the power of their mother. Always think of a goddess as someone beautiful, wearing silks and jewels, etc. But there are many exceptions.
That's true. Not all goddesses are good looking. In Bangalore rural district, a goddess suffers from defective vision. She cannot see anything nearby and has a long sight. So the nearby devotees do not receive any favor from her. On the other hand, people from distant places get her boons.
I will not be surprised if a devotee presents a pair of contact lenses or glasses to the goddess so that she can see even those who are nearby to bless them.
To continue our story, about 200 years ago, plague hit a place called Sirsi in our state, and even the British officer's daughter suffered from this disease. Though a non-believer in Hindu tradition, this officer prayed to the goddess and his daughter was cured. As a further remedy, the wooden image of the goddess was transported from the village and left at the outskirts of another village. This place also did the same, and so did the next village until the image was finally immersed in the sea. this event is still carried out as a grand festival. In many places, there is no image of the goddess. She can just be a belly stone within the village. At times, she is only a head-shaped stone placed at the outskirts. On this stone, a mustache could be carved or painted to stress her manly powers. Or she could just be a tree. Her body is the village itself, and she has grown roots in its soil.
This concept of a village goddess also has different meanings. For example, just as a child goes to his mother and complains about somebody who has not treated him properly, the villager goes to the temple and complains about somebody who has done him wrong. The mother naturally punishes the wrongdoer, as this story illustrates. Gayatri?
Here is the story. In a particular village of South India, anyone who has been cheated by another person takes a fowl to the shrine of the goddess. He kills the bird, dips his hand in its blood, and thinking of his enemy, smears the wall of the shrine with blood. Once he returns to the village, his enemy suffers from diarrhea, vomiting, fever, and convulsions. Repenting for his sin, the afflicted person offers worship to the goddess and thus ends the enmity. So, the village goddess is the judge to provide justice to the aggrieved person. This method of seeking justice in the presence of the goddess is a very common practice in the villages.
Just goes to show that protection of her people is foremost for her. I think even the concept of fertility of the soil and crops rising out of the earth is still very important to the concept of the village deities.
This is a story my mother used to tell us when we were children and fussed about eating vegetables. Once upon a time, a drought occurred in central India and sages prayed to a forest goddess by name Banashankari for rains. Unable to bear their suffering, the goddess wept continuously for 9 nights and her tears filled up lakes and ponds, irrigating the land. She also produced vegetation out of her body and came to be called Shakambari. She is still worshipped in the month of October with 108 varieties of vegetables and fruits.
From fertility, the goddess is also capable of protecting against snake bites, scorpion bites, etc. In one temple, a scorpion appears on a particular day of the year, receives the food given by devotees, and slips away. The goddess is called Vrishikeshwari, Vrishika meaning the scorpion, and this tradition still continues. In many parts of India, a snake pit is also worshipped to pray for children.
Manasa is a North Indian snake goddess, and a tale tells us that when a trader ignored the deity, all his 6 sons were bitten by a poisonous snake. It was only after he realized his mistake and prayed to Manasa did she restore the lives of his sons. In the earlier era, women who gave up their life for the welfare of the community were also worshipped.
There was once severe floods in a village, and a lady by name Channamma protected the entire area by holding both her hands as a barricade against the gushing waters. She lost her arms and died, but was immortalized as a goddess. Her image has no hands, and she is fondly called as the armless Amma.
There are many mythological stories about women who suffered injustice at the hands of males and became goddesses.
Mariamma of South India is an example where a young Brahmin girl is tricked into marriage by a lower caste man. She becomes very angry at this betrayal and kills herself. She punishes her husband by burning him into ashes and transforms herself into a goddess. At these temples, the husband is often shown as a male beast.
I have in fact witnessed a festival in a goddess temple where the male is symbolically humiliated and sent out of the village as punishment. This is really very interesting, as it helps us understand the fierce independence and dominance of a woman over her male consorts in traditional Hindu society in ancient times.
You mean to say that men are often cast in disruptive roles and the village goddess is equated with a civilized and just society?
It's true.
Do you think it is the result of matrilineal societies that existed in ancient India?
Yes. In ancient India, mother right was the basis of social system of the agricultural people. Agriculture was the discovery of the woman. She was the first cultivator of the soil, and her childbearing capability was similar to the vegetative power of the earth. The normal happenings of wind, rain, sunshine, even storms and eclipses could not be explained by the tribal people. They were explained as something from the heavens. The fact that the tree blooms with flowers and then fruits, which is used so happily by the community, must have given rise to the idea of nature as mother. Thus, the initial stages of this economy upheld the supremacy of the woman. The life-producing power of the mother became the central figure of tribal and rural religion. Mother Earth became the womb in which crops were sown. Female figures with a bulging womb and huge sexual organs were carved and were offered magical rites to increase fertility. Thus, primitive mother goddess cult was an important feature of our religion. This identification of earth with woman is universal and can be found in all ancient cultures and civilizations across the world. That is why the cult of the mother goddess has been a very important feature of our religion.
When we speak of the term mother for the goddess of India, we must bear in mind that this word suggests a mother's nurturing aspect rather than act of physical childbearing. Lakshmi is the mother of all, but she bore no children. Nor did Saraswati, the goddess of knowledge. Parvati, the consort of Shiva, is the mother of the elephant god Ganesha and Skanda, the warrior god. But she did not bear them in her womb. This is a very strange fact, as in Indian society, a bride is fully accepted only after she gives birth to a baby.
Another very funny thing is, in spite of being called as mother, the village goddess is a virgin and unmarried. Her untamed sexual energy is magically turned into a very powerful destruction of the demons who are men. Bursting with this energy, she is unrefined, consumes country liquor, and enjoys eating raw meat. So, animal and blood sacrifices are commonly offered to the goddess to please her. Talking about blood, the menstrual flow is believed to make the land fertile, and there is a very fascinating tale behind this. Shakti, the wife of Shiva, one of the major Hindu gods, dies. And unable to bear her death, Shiva roams about like a madman, carrying her dead body over his shoulders. To make him put it down, the other gods cut the body into pieces and make them fall at several places. Her female organ fell at one such place, and the fossilized stone is said to menstruate for 3 days in a year. Thousands of people visit this temple in the northeastern part of India to pray to the goddess on this occasion.
Thank you.
There's a strong relationship between a village goddess and trees. People believe that the goddess lives in these trees and hence do not cut them. Instead, they wrap a sari around the tree, apply turmeric and vermilion, and wave lamps at the tree. There is this story of a village chieftain near Bangalore who cut a banyan tree, not realizing that goddess of good fortune resides in it. He used the wood for household purposes and met a gory death. Trees and plants are also held very sacred in India, and many of them are worshipped as goddesses. Among them, the most popular plant all over India is the basil plant and is called Tulsi. Each traditional house has a small square earthen pot in the backyard where Tulsi is planted and daily a lamp is lit in her favor.
This tradition has a lot of scientific explanations also.
Tula means one who is incomparable and true to the name. Tulsi leaves have a lot of medicinal value and have proved to be helpful in improving digestion, in curing ailments like gallbladder stones, jaundice, cough, cold, etc. Just one leaf of Tulsi a day can reduce the blood sugar level as well as cholesterol. It can improve the digestive system and can reduce fever.
No wonder today many popular brands of tea contain Tulsi leaves.
Tulsi is considered to be the beloved of Krishna and Vishnu, and a garland of Tulsi leaves is said to be the best floral offering to please the god.
Talking about trees and plants, I would like to tell our listeners about the plant forms of Durga. And foremost among them is banana, a very auspicious plant all over India. Raw banana is used in curries. Ripe ones are eaten as fruits. Its leaves are used as plates on all traditional occasions and marriages, and its bark is used for craft decorations. Turmeric is used as a basic seasoning in every type of Indian cooking. It too has many medicinal properties and is also used as a remedy for minor cuts and bruises. It is the plant form of Durga herself. The wood apple tree is considered to be very sacred, and a single leaf offered with devotion is equal to an elaborate offering. The fruit of the tree is very cooling and is useful in stomach ailments. The goddess of this tree is Shakti, that is, energy personified. Pomegranate fruit is described as the blood-colored teeth of the goddess. Ashoka is a very sacred tree in our country and is believed to increase fertility. A goddess called One who is free from sorrow lives in this tree. Harvested rice or paddy is a highly auspicious food grain, and no feast or festival is complete without offering it to Lakshmi, called as Dhanya Lakshmi. We worship other traditional plants and trees as goddesses, as they make us feel good.
Trees as goddesses and gods have been well established in India. For example, the neem tree is female and the sacred banyan is male. In our country, villagers often face severe drought, and their way of pleasing the rain god is to celebrate the marriage of the neem and the banyan trees. They plant these saplings and conduct a regular marriage just as they would do for their children. Slowly, the place around the saplings becomes a meeting place for the villagers, and a small temple comes up there. I have seen one such temple and some 60-year-old neem and banyan trees in a village about 150 miles from Bangalore. I was lucky to find an old lady there, almost blind, who remembered the planting, the marriage, and how the rain god appeared in their village, bringing the much-needed water.
Let me add an amusing story. There is a village goddess by name Kabbalamma. Once she had an argument with her husband as to who is the superior of the two. So they take a bet that whoever goes to the market and buys all the essential things for the house without spending even a cent would win. And the winner has to pour burning coal over the loser's head. So, first the husband goes to the market and comes back defeated, as he obviously cannot buy anything without spending money. Now comes the turn of our heroine. She creates a hurricane in the market, and the traders close their eyes to avoid dust. She picks up whatever she wants and comes home triumphantly. On a particular day of the summer months, strong winds blow over the village and the goddess symbolizes the winds. As part of the event, burning coal is poured over her husband's image. This legend tells us how intelligent and quick-witted a goddess can be.
Just another shoplifter story. It goes to show that being so close to her devotees, the goddess naturally takes on their characteristics, including the very common husband and wife tiffs. Or maybe symbolic gestures are used to tell the story.
Hindu, I would like to say here that just like you or me or any woman, the moods of the goddesses are many. At times, she gets angry and furious and throws a tantrum if not appeased. She loves good clothes and gifts. At the same time, she's so down to earth and practical. She protects people, thus proving herself to be beneficial. She's loved by everybody and in turn, she loves them, just like a caring mother.
I totally agree with you. Each symbolic gesture and each story about the Indian goddess is full of romance, courage, foresight, kindness, leadership, and so many other good qualities.
No wonder. The village goddess has rulers, traders, farmers, and in fact, people from all sections of the society virtually falling at her feet, praising her and adoring her.
Does it mean that in India only village goddesses are worshipped?
No, there are many more sophisticated goddesses. We will talk about them in our next show. To end, thank you, Vatsala, for the painstaking research you have done. Gayatri and Aparna, thank you for your very good inputs. The recording for this show was done by M.R. Ramamurthy. And I am Indu Ramesh, signing off from Bangalore, India, for Wings.
Our email is wings@wings.org, website www.wings.org. The Wings Sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle Is Cast. Special thanks to Suzette Cullen and to Genevieve Vaughn, author of 36 Steps Toward a Gift Economy. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
What is the forest industry most afraid of? Shifting the conversation from saving old growth to protecting what's left of BC's primary forests. Areas with minimal human disturbance and far greater ecological value than tree farms. Save What's Left Conservation Society is a volunteer-run group at the forefront of the movement to save the last remnants of unprotected primary forest through seeking reforms to the government agency, BC Timber Sales. Learn more at savewhatsleft.ca, find us on social media, and please support our vital work through our website.
The art of the mixtape is not lost. Tune in to the Vancouver Mixtape for your own personal mix of Vancouver's best independent music, interviews, and more. Join me, Jesse, and my co-host Jamie on our trek through Vancouver's underground, Sunday nights at 8 o'clock on CJSF.